We leave Saigon. We head over into Cambodia. And the couple of places that we intended on visiting in Cambodia were Phnom Penh, the capital city. Always find that a capital city or the capital city of a country is normally pretty decent. From there, we were going to head up to Angkor Wat, the massive Angkor complex, which was something that we had put down on our, you know, to-do list before we even started. Then off to a wonderful place called Battambang. That was going from the Lonely Planet guide to ride a bamboo railway. And from the bamboo railway from Battambang to then go to Thailand, basically to spend a week in Bangkok. Cambodia is a quirky place. It has a lot of very bad recent history, with especially in the, you know, the 70s of Khmer Rouge and, you know, Pol Pot and things like that. And that was on show. The thing that took us by surprise, kind of by surprise, but was eye-opening at the same time, was the amount of poverty in Phnom Penh. You know, people walking around, you know, with one leg on one of their crutches. People asking for money all the time, even when you're, you know, trying to enjoy a pleasant, you know, cost-effective meal by the river. You know, people coming up to you all the time and, you know, asking for cash. And yeah, that can be quite wearisome after a while. And again, people are coming up to you, the colour of your skin, it gives it away. You know, you're probably from Western Europe. You're probably, if you're not from Western Europe, you're from Australia, because that's the assumption of people in the world. And that got a bit tiresome after a while. Now, there's a place called the Killing Fields, also a scary-ass place called S21, which was a prison used in the Khmer Rouge regime, which these places don't normally get lost for words. These places were horrific. We learnt an awful lot. To be fair, our moto taxi driver who ferried us around all day was very informative, very knowledgeable of the goings on, and took us to, you know, loads of places. The Killing Fields were bizarre. You're getting shown trees where, you know, reportedly, you know, young children or babies were clubbed against to kill them. You see these piles of skulls everywhere. You see these giant mounds in the ground where, you know, the dead still are, apparently. You know, big heaps are covered up now. Big mounds. Actually saw, you know, supposed blood on the tree. And the reason I'm being a bit, I don't want to be facetious when I say supposed blood. You know, taking it at face value, you know, that is the blood, apparently. But yeah, sometimes people might want to over-dramatise things just in case. But if it was the actual blood, then yeah, I mean, it's scary, scary shit. And, you know, to realise that you're sort of in and around a place that has, number one, it was eerie. Number two, it was quiet. Number three, knowing that, you know, hundreds, yeah, thousands of people have been taken there and basically murdered. Just, you get lost for words. Put it this way, after going to the Killing Fields, we certainly had a few beers to try and forget about what we'd just seen. We went to S21 as well, which is in the middle of Phnom Penh. And again, that was a detention centre used for all sorts of horrific torture on people. Again, eerie. You've seen the photos of people that have, you know, perished in that prison, tortured. It's just scary, scary stuff. And to realise that that stuff had only happened in the 70s was, you know, it's barbaric. After a day of looking at skulls, after a day of looking at where people died, after a day of looking at, you know, detention centres with, you know, torture implements and reading the stories from people that survived, not many, granted, but people that survived, and you read the things that they were doing to people, I mean, well, you kind of lose your appetite. That being said, we did have a couple of beers to sort of drown away what we just seen. As with many things that we say in the episodes, we would always recommend going to these sorts of places. It's important to learn. It's important to find out what goes on around the world and what's happened. And the world doesn't just revolve around your own country. You know, a lot of things have happened. And, you know, as morbid as it is, number one, it makes for interesting trips. It also makes for great knowledge. It's also something that, you know, you should probably learn as well. Because if you ever think you've got it bad, guaranteed to you, there's going to be someone else out there in the world that is in a worse position than you are. That is just a fact. Apart from walking around Phnom Penh, having some great meals, a few beers, Beer Lao, or whatever it was called, it wouldn't be Beer Lao because that's Lao, we were in Cambodia. Oh, we headed off to Angkor. Now, Angkor Wat is a beautiful place. It is part of the, what I believe they called the really old Khmer Rouge. So you're talking centuries and centuries ago. The whole complex can take a very long time to go around. We were lucky enough when we turned up to a place called Siem Reap, which is the nearest sort of town to the Angkor complex. Straight away, we negotiated with a tuk-tuk driver to take us around the whole complex for 3 days. It started with a wake-up call about 4:30 each morning, which by anyone's standards can leave you a bit bleary-eyed. But Vinny, shout out to Vinny, still got your business card in our folder of memories. It was absolutely great. At $5 a day was his fee, which, you know, is completely ludicrous. $5 a day was his fee. He bought us lunch a couple of times, kept us stocked up with loads of water, a couple of tins of Coke as well. Bear in mind, during the day, it was reaching 36, 37 degrees. He knew a little bit about some of the sites as well. So on a couple of the sites, he turned into a guided tour as well. But most of the time, he would, you know, take us to places of his choosing, drop us off, leave us an hour, and, you know, we went off to explore. The great thing about the Angkor complex is, well, there's many great things. Number one, it's not near a body of water, and the stones that they use are ginormous. The nearest body of water, apparently 50 kilometers, maybe 50 miles, one of the two, away from, you know, where the site sits. So how they transported these giant, massive blocks to build all these temples is mesmerizing, to say the least. Secondly, interestingly about Angkor Wat itself, that the Angkor Wat temple itself, I believe, if I get this correct, I believe it's Hindu or Hindi. It could be Sikh. It's one of the two, given every other temple on the complex is Buddhist. The main temple itself is actually not Buddhist at all. It's for a different religion. There's a massive moat around the Angkor Wat temple itself, which again, it's filled. It begs the question of how on earth has all that water got there in the first place. And having watched a few programs about Angkor Wat itself, what amazes me is that even nowadays, apparently engineers are not able to figure out how exactly it was built and how exactly they have worked out the drainage systems in the complex as well. That's what I understand from watching a few programs at Blowing Up History, one of them, and I think there was something else on the Nat Geo channel. Our words will not do the Angkor Wat complex justice. All I can say is go there. It is phenomenal. It was $50 for a week's ticket, which is well worth it. I would say we paid the tuk-tuk driver $15. We actually made him cry at the end because we gave him a $20 tip. Not to be flash, we weren't being cocky or anything like that. We just felt that the guy had transported us around for 3 days straight. He'd been up early in the morning. He was awesome. Say, bought us a couple of lunches here and there. You know, loads of bottles of water. He was always asking, are you okay? And, you know, what do you want to do? Where do you want to do it? And yeah, Vinny was fantastic. So we gave him a $20 tip, brought a few tears to his eyes. And I don't think he was expecting that. And also probably hadn't been tipped that before. So again, you know, the power that we can do going to other countries, other places is brilliant. Not always a case of just chucking cash at people. Let's say $20 to us, you know, not a lot, and it was cracking value for the service that he had provided. A couple of bizarre things happened though in Siem Reap. First of all, if you've ever been golden showered by a cat, I wouldn't recommend it. We were sat there at a restaurant, Aaron and myself and a lovely lady called Nancy who we met up with. We'd gone out for dinner and noticed that there was a couple of cats walking around. Didn't think anything of it, ordered the food. Just about to dig into the starters, and all of a sudden, you know, the fans are whirring. All of a sudden, loads of drops of water hit us, hit the food, hit us. I thought, well, that's a bit bizarre, that's a bit strange. Kind of looked out on the veranda. Doesn't look like it's going to rain. Could be a bit of rain. Didn't know. About 10 seconds later, this cat's jumped down. We've kind of looked at each other, looked at the cat. Cat's looking at us, and he's like, yeah, motherfuckers, I just got you. We're looking at each other, and we're like, oh no. That cat's just pissed on us. He has actually just pissed on us, hasn't he? I say, unfortunately, it's hit the fan, and it's gone everywhere. We just burst out laughing. I mean, in those situations, when something like that happens, you laugh or you cry. We all burst out laughing. Luckily, one of the waiters, I believe, has seen what happened. He was laughing as well. He couldn't stop laughing. He was very apologetic afterwards. But yeah, he couldn't stop laughing. And thankfully moved us to a new table. We didn't have time to go back and change our clothes. So luckily we got a new food, a new starters, new main. And we ate a meal drenched in cat's piss in Siem Reap. Wonderful. Also felt bad for a couple of Japanese tourists that were there. We were at a bar drinking beer as you do, having a laugh, and they were impressed because I was just naming J-League teams just for fun, because we didn't speak Japanese, they didn't really speak English, so I was just naming football teams. But also at the same time, that was when I believe it was the Fukushima thing happened, and we were the ones to break the news to them, showed them the photos, and probably ruined their evening by showing them that. Felt a bit bad for doing that. So, that was just one of those really bizarre coincidences. And a lot of the time these bizarre coincidences happen, you'll find out some extraordinary stuff that happened in the USA as well, that we seem to be in the right place at the right time most of the time. But that was Siem Reap. Plopped off to Battambang. Battambang's a tiny sort of French colonial sort of place with a bamboo railway. Kid you not, you get on the rails, you're sitting on bamboo, your driver's going up and down, and when it comes to two trains meeting on the same line, the drivers do paper, rock, scissors, or rock, paper, scissors to determine who has to dismantle their train to let the other train go past. A bizarre experience, to say the least, but it was what it was. And from there, and I'm not sure I should really admit this on the podcast, because if anyone from the Thai government's listening, I do apologise for what I'm just about to say. We got to the border with Thailand, and it was one of those you pay for the visa on advance, and thorough bag checks were being done, and we were in the queue. Wasn't moving that fast, but there was a connecting bus the other side, not an issue. And I had a realisation that had some, how should we put this politely, green substances in my bag that probably shouldn't have been in my bag, because the Thais are very strict on bringing in illegal things, shall we say, into their country. And I had this realisation about two people back in the queue that this was in my bag. And I kind of looked at Aaron and said, oh, Aaron, I said, shit. He said, what? I said, remember that stuff we were doing in Siem Reap? And he's like, yeah. So I've got it in my bag. And he's like, fuck's sake, you're an idiot. I said, well, keep calm, keep composed. Don't worry about it. And we just have to, pray that no one looks in the bags. Thorough bag searches were being done. So I'm bricking it at the border. Second in queue. Guy in front was Russian. He'd gone up to the counter. Now, I'm not sure what's happening here because, Aaron's at his counter. He's doing what he's doing. He's fine. He's got nothing on him. So he's let in. And I'm still in the queue. This Russian guy is speaking to the person at the counter. Now, I don't get the conversation. I wasn't really listening. But this guy was taking a lot of time. And this Russian guy absolutely kicked off. Now, what had happened, I don't remember. I don't think he actually got let into the country. But he absolutely kicked off at the person behind the counter. So much so that the police got involved and carted him off. Now, bless, because the police had done that and this guy kicked off and taken up a lot of time, the next few people in the queue, i.e. myself and a few behind me, it was literally a very quick passport check, hand over the $15 or so for the visa, and they were just letting people through. Thank fuck for that. Got on the minibus to head into Bangkok, and I breathed a massive sigh of relief. I said, probably shouldn't be saying this, but it's 10 years later on down the line. I'm going to risk it for a biscuit. So, yeah, thankfully, well, let's put it this way. The greenery was disposed of that evening in very quick fashion. And we lived to tell the tale. Got to Bangkok. The only thing that we had lined up, because we didn't really want to go around Thailand too much, you know, read in Lonely Planet from speaking to other people, it's a bit of a dodgy country, people are bartering all the time, it's a bit, so we just stayed, we located ourselves in Bangkok for a week. I'd basically done a load of drinking, loads of visiting the Koh San Road, very famous road. I think I was accosted by a couple of ladyboys. Yeah, not going to go into details on that, but that happened. We also went for a funky train ride up to the bridge over the River Kwai. You may or may not have seen the films, you know, some Burmese Thai railway built by, you know, Japanese POWs back in World War II time. It was a 3.5 hour journey up there by train, walked across the bridge, walked back across the bridge, hung around a little bit, looked at the sights, and then took a 3.5 hour journey back. It was great because it was $2 each way. Really no complaints. It was a super cheap day out, very hot, although given the third class seats, your arse hurt after a while. That was probably the only disadvantage of that day. But apart from that, the overlasting memory, two overlasting memories of Bangkok, three overlasting memories thinking about it, is it is true what they say about the Chang beer, that it could be any percentage. So it might say 5% on the bottle, but bollocks, well, I'm sure we had stuff that was 15%, which tasted like it, and we had stuff that tasted like water. Absolutely crazy. The Thai dry green curry is unbelievably hot. We were both crying eating that. Didn't help that we were sipping down a Chang afterwards, which probably added fuel to the fire. The third overlasting memory was watching Luis Suarez's debut. Say Liverpool fans, a signed whilst we were in Thailand. We watched his debut, and then a couple of days later, we were at a bar. It's Liverpool Man United. You know, it's a worldwide game. I was at a bar, pretty much packed of Man United fans. We're the only Liverpool fans, and I believe if it wasn't Suarez, it might have been Dirk Hout. He scored a hat trick that day. It was beautiful. It was wonderful. Nothing better than seeing a bunch of pissed off Man United fans. Delightful. Absolutely delightful. I think that's three memories. I'm going to go with the fourth, which was on the way to the airport. And again, we decided to go across the international dateline. Probably not a good thing in hindsight. But we experienced an hour of dry lightning from the wake-up call at 4 o'clock in the morning. The hour it took to get to the airport, it's pitch black. But all around us, just so many forks of lightning. It wasn't raining at all, which was bizarre. And the cab driver was explaining that it's quite a regular phenomenon in Thailand. And it was just awe-inspiring just to be, you know, going up this motorway, just all these forks of lightning, you know, lighting up the dark sky. It's a fantastic experience. I won't forget that. And it's probably still, although I forget the name, one of the best airports I've ever been to. It was recently built at the time, the new Bangkok airport. It was an absolute delight. Absolute delight sitting around there for a little while. It was well designed, well laid out. Hardly anyone was there because it was, you know, by the time we got there, about 5 o'clock in the morning. And it was a pure delight. When we reflect on Asia, we look back at things and we go, we should have gone to Laos. We didn't allow enough time in Southeast Asia. We really weren't expecting what we expected. We had such a fantastic time. Probably should have spent a bit more in Thailand. Probably should have spent more time everywhere we went. But we look back, we're honest about this, and these are the things that we, you know, we said that whenever we travel again, these are things that we wouldn't repeat. We wouldn't repeat these mistakes, basically. And, you know, we have stuck to that. But that brings us to the end of Southeast Asia. That brings us to Bangkok. We're sat at the airport. We've got a hell of a journey ahead of us because we know we're flying to Los Angeles. We know we're going via a few places, a few stopovers. And we know that we're going the wrong side of the dateline. So rather than going all the way back, we are pretty much flying eastwards. If you imagine looking at a globe, you go back, you go west, you go forward, you go east. We have decided intentionally to fly east. And again, that was down to cost. It was the most cost-effective way of doing it. So join us for the next episode where we start in Los Angeles. Hasta luego.